the only way that you can lead successfully over time and avoid these pitfalls is to stay as close to God as you can.
This podcast is brought to you by Blackbee Ministries International. To find out more, visit blackbee.org.
Well, welcome to the Richard Blackaby Leadership Podcast. My name is Sam, and I'm your host, and I'm sitting across from Dr. Richard Blackaby.
Good to be with you once again, Sam.
Always a pleasure, Richard. And these never get old, for me at least.
Oh, no.
I know it's the same bearded face you have to look at every time, but,
Keep hoping for better, but I'll take what I get.
You know what? Beggars can't be choosers. Well, we've got... We're coming up on your conference at the Cove, Billy Graham Training Center there, and that's going to be May 15th to 17th. There is still room available to attend the conference.
For the sessions.
For the sessions, and there may still be room at for the dinner or for the meals. I believe it is all booked up, and I don't even know that you can get on the wait list at this point for... staying on campus, but you can still attend. There are options to stay nearby if you want to do that. So we encourage people to sign up for that. We'll leave links for that in the show notes.
That's going to be really good. A lot of great people will be there. I love just seeing the connections. People come from all over the country, and then they meet and they have meals together and visit, and all these little serendipities take place while you just want to attend a conference.
Well, we've got folks from all over the place coming. We've got folks from our own local friends. We're all going to go up there together. And
I heard of a whole Sunday school class that just the whole group of adults just are all going together as a group. So it's fun.
Well, it's good. It's a good place to be, and it'll be a great conference, and we're looking forward to that. And as always, we'll leave links to all that in the show notes. But today we're going to continue our series on the pitfalls. Common pitfalls, we're looking at 10 that you outline in your book, Spiritual Leadership, that you wrote with your father several years back now. But it's worth revisiting. And again, spiritual leadership has been used all over the place, really, and in the university settings and leadership training settings. And it's a great resource.
Remember years ago, I dropped into the Senate of the state of Florida Senate, and a bunch of the senators were all studying this spiritual leadership book and reading chapters and working through it. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah.
So we are on number 6 of 10.
Yeah. So 10 pitfalls. And of course, anytime you have a position, a leadership role of great responsibility and influence, there's also going to be a matching temptation. The higher you rise, the farther you can fall. And so it almost seems as if the greater responsibility you have, in one sense, the more exposure you have to various kinds of pitfalls that could take you down.
It seems like it amplifies. It's like when it's just small, you're leading a small team, maybe the pressure isn't as great. And so as you grow as a leader, as it becomes more public, as things start to happen, it seems like whatever pitfalls there were before, they're still there, and maybe it's just a stronger temptation, or it seems more difficult.
And I think the consequences are greater. The more people you're influencing, then if you fall, then it has a greater impact for bad,
for sure,
for evil on a greater number of people. And so the sixth one that we'd like to look at, we've looked in two previous podcasts at the first five. And so the sixth one is what we just call oversensitivity, just basically being thin-skinned. And you just can't be thin-skinned and lead, because you're inevitably going to be second-guessed and criticized and opposed. And if you take all the opposition, the criticism personally all the time, it's just going to drive you crazy. I've on Facebook, I'm not sure how I got started on this, but I have a bunch of feeds of... wild animals, lion attacks on various animals in the wild. I'm not quite sure where how I got onto that radar, but there's usually a couple of different videos I could watch of lions trying to take down, you know, a buffalo or something. And those lions, boy, I tell you, they're awful to watch. I mean, they go after your neck or they try to pull you down. They'll pull down a zebra or they, whatever. But it was interesting. They showed this rhino, this full-fledged big rhino, just kind of lumbering along. And the lions just don't know what to do with it. It's just like, where do we even bite this thing? It's just like built like a tank, you know. It's just so thick. Grab hold of its rear end or something with your mouth, but you're not going to do much to it, you know. And I thought, you know, in a sense, that's the kind of hide you have to have as a leader. Just and again, it doesn't mean that you're not sensitive to feedback, and sometimes you need people that can say to you, know, hey, Sam, you need to think about this or be careful about that. Doesn't mean you're just oblivious to what goes on around you, but
yeah, and you're not advocating for callous leadership,
right? But once you know what it is you need to do, once you've sought God's direction and you have a real confidence that we've got to get this done, then you can't waffle after that. You can't, every critic that comes along, you can't suddenly second guess what God told you already. And I've seen leaders who've done that. They just, whoever it is, anyone who raises an objection and suddenly the leader is in turmoil about that, or they feel deeply, deeply wounded because they were trying to lead with a pure heart and integrity, and yet they were attacked and maligned nonetheless. And that can hurt, and it can disappoint you. But you have to be careful that you don't become so sensitive that you can't just stay the course. You know, I always felt like I want to do full due diligence to make sure I know what it is that God wants me to do. But once I know that, I just don't want to be deterred. I want to just put aim my nose forward and keep moving regardless of what shots come my way.
Well, you know, and I think something you said there is key, which is, you know, do your due diligence and make sure that you're going in the direction that God's called you to go. Because I think that's where people get into trouble. It's like, well, I think this is it, but you kind of tentatively go ahead and then you get swept off course because you weren't sure from the start that that's what you should be doing.
Right.
And so you're more susceptible.
And so, you're not, you haven't kind of planted yourself firmly yet so that, you know, any kind of headwind that comes along and all of a sudden you're being cast to the side. And you know, it's interesting, Mark Twain had an interesting quote. He said, it takes your enemy and your friend working together to hurt you. The one to slander you and the other to get the news to you. So it's like, don't you love those friends?
I love a good Mark Twain quote.
Yeah. So they're saying these dear friends that, hey, did you hear what so-and-so said about you? You know, that just really bothers me that he would think you were such a low down, worthless person. You know, at a certain point, you can't just be focusing on what others are saying. You've got to bear down. And if you let people get under your skin, then you're just going to always be so vulnerable. There's a famous story that we tell in the book of Sam Andrews. Sam Andrews was an early partner with John Rockefeller. 1870, he helped start the Standard Oil Company, which would become the wealthiest, richest, biggest company in all of America. But of course, Rockefeller was very focused and determined on doing business his way, and which was to build the business, to keep growing it. And Andrews was just kind of wanting to cash in. He just wanted to get as big a dividend as possible and then be able to spend it on a lavish lifestyle. And Rockefeller was happy just to roll over most of the profits to reinvest, to keep building the company. And so Andrews would resist that and speak against that. But Rockefeller was persuasive enough that he always got his way. And Andrews began to get his feelings hurt. You know, he was one of the founding members of that company. He owned close to 20% of the company. And so he felt like he should get his way at times and and it just got really peaked that Rockefeller always swayed the won the day. And so finally one day, just in about 1878, after about 8 years of that, he got so frustrated one day, he just said, I want out of this business. And Rockefeller just looked at him with his steely eyes and said, what do you want for your shares? And I think Rockefeller was just tired of these threats and all these kind of things that Andrews would say. And so Andrews said, I want $1 million, which in 1878 was a lot of money. It was a fortune. And Rockefeller said, I'll have your money to you tomorrow, which is amazing at that time to be able to come up with $1 million check in a day. But Rockefeller did it and bought him out. And Andrews was delighted. He felt like he had finally bested Rockefeller in a business deal where he had gotten way more for his asking price or his price than what it was really worth. But in true Rockefeller style, he went straight over to Vanderbilt and sold it for about $1.3 million. And so in 1 week, he made a $300,000 profit. And at that point, Andrews began to have second thoughts about maybe I didn't make such a wise choice. Andrews built a massive 100-room mansion in Cleveland where he lived, which was a monstrosity. It was enormous. It required something like 100 servants just to maintain. And he basically just burned through all that $1 million. And they finally had to tear down his mansion because it was just too awkward and large to maintain. And, of course, if he'd held on to his money, if he'd held on to his shares, within 20 or so years, 25 years later, it would have been worth somewhere like $800 million. To have $800 million in 1930 would have been, would have made you fabulously wealthy. But his heirs have probably regretted ever since the fact that Andrews just got so thin-skinned that he just got frustrated with Rockefeller getting his own way. I'd say it's kind of like if I were investing and I was partners with Warren Buffett and he was always getting his way and where to invest money.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'd get over it and, right. and just keep letting him be in charge. But the pride, sensitivity cost Andrews dearly. And I've just thought, how many people have been in leadership roles, maybe as a pastor, maybe as a leader in management somewhere, but the second guessing, the criticisms, the gossip just got to them to the point they just didn't want to put up with it anymore. And so it cost them and it cost their organization because they, and of course, that's what a critic wants. A critic wants you to be sensitive to where their little sniping at you from the sidelines starts to have its effect. And it's very demoralizing when instead of you being overreacting to the criticism, instead you can blow it off. And
yeah.
I think it was maybe Spurgeon at one point that someone said to them, Charles, did you hear that so-and-so said that you had a problem with this or you had a problem with that? And he kind of laughed and said, if that's all that they know about me, that I'm doing well, I've got a lot more problems than that. And just to kind of say, you're not going to demoralize me because I know better than anyone how flawed I am,
yeah.
how imperfect I am. And yet God still uses me.
Well, that reminds me of, we've got two little girls, 5 and 2, and our 2-year-old will... apparently look at our 5-year-old and our 5-year-old just gets all bent out of shape and says, she's looking at me. And you just think well, she does that because you react the way you do.
Yeah.
And if you, we say this ad nauseum, but it's like, just ignore, if she sticks her tongue out at you or just stares at you, ignore it. And it goes away.
Yeah.
But if you react, that's exactly what
a younger sibling, power to annoy you.
You're handing over your the power to the critic or to the outsider. And you see these childish behaviors in adults. It's you realize, oh, okay, they're just doing what my 5-year-old is doing.
And I would just maybe lastly just say, it kind of leads into the next one, but There have been times when I've had people do things that disappointed me, hurt my feelings, people I expected more from, and then they just didn't really rise to the occasion. And I found it, I mean, I don't want to minimize the fact that it can be hurtful, but yeah. What I have found is there are just times where you need to take that hurt to God and just spend time in God's presence and just lift that up to Him. Say, God, this hurts. I thought this person knew me better than that, or that they cared more about me than that, and they're just maligning my character, my motives. I know I'm doing what you've told me to do, but it sure hurts that these people are acting this way. And God understands that. Jesus had some experience with people falsely accusing Him and yeah. misunderstanding His good intentions, and so He knows. But He also knows the good that comes when you stay true to the course and don't get discouraged. And so sometimes you got to just take that to God, and which leads to the seventh pitfall, which is just what we call spiritual lethargy. Meaning that we just get careless with our walk with God. And the only way that you can lead successfully over time and avoid these pitfalls is to stay as close to God as you can. Just when you are regularly, daily meeting face-to-face with God in your quiet times, you can never get too far off track because you might start being tempted by some sin or by some oversensitivity or whatever else. But then you meet with God and He begins to lay you bare and He begins to expose some wrong thinking, some prideful thinking. Maybe He is aware that you're being tempted maybe by sexual sin or some or by greed or something else. And He brings His scripture to bear upon your life. Or as you pray, it's just it's hard to still be angry and upset at someone, a critic or an opponent, if you're praying for them regularly. But what happens a lot of times is that I think in our walks with God, we tend to plateau with those. It just seems almost inevitable that at some points in our life, we start coasting. And you know, there I think if we were all to take a spiritual inventory of our lives, we would all be able to identify periods where we were growing quite rapidly. And maybe we had a really good devotional book that we were working through, or maybe we're in a book of the Bible that was just really speaking to us. And we're in a good space and we're journaling and doing some various things. Or maybe our pastor is going through a great sermon series right now and it's just really speaking to us. And we feel like we're in a growth you know, trajectory right now, just really taking things in, but then inevitably that never lasts, that never continues in its intensity. We at some point just start coasting, and we kind of operate on yesterday's walk with God, on victories we won earlier with God, and now we're reliving those. We're going back to that same memory, but it's not fresh anymore. That's why I wrote a book in part called Living Out of the Overflow, the overflow of your vibrant, fresh, growing walk with God. And oftentimes, for instance, we talked earlier about cynicism. And I tell you, you can just tell these two sort of go hand in glove together. When you start to become spiritually lethargic, you also can develop some really sorry attitudes of cynicism, where you're not really seeing things through the eyes of God anymore. Now you're starting to see them through these jaundiced eyes of someone who's stopped growing, and God's word's not fresh in your life anymore.
I think everybody has a tendency or maybe a default mode to seek comfort, you know, and I think that's something you have to actively battle against, because we all want to be comfortable. We all want to adjust the thermostat to feel nice. We all want to have a bed that feels comfortable, you know, and so much of our life is driven by seeking that comfort. And I think if we don't pay attention, you know, that's what our walk becomes with the Lord. Is we don't want to be stretched. We don't want to grow because that's painful.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it, for whatever reason, we just are too easily satisfied, and we feel like, well, I feel like I'm a fairly mature Christian now. I know the Bible quite well. I've been in church all my life. I don't need to be getting up at some ridiculous hour in the morning and spending extra time with God at this point. These days I think my preferred kind of sleep work ratio, I like to kind of head to bed around 10 at night, and then my alarm's always ready, set to go by 6 at the, sometimes I gotta get up earlier. Like tomorrow, I gotta get up at 4 tomorrow because I'm flying out somewhere, but normally 6 o'clock. And so even this morning, I see it 6 o'clock, time to get up, but boy, I tell you that the bed never feels as good at 10 at night as it does at 6 in the morning when you're, you know, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like having a shower or shaving. And I'm thinking, I'm an author. I know the Bible well. Do I really need to get up at 6 o'clock and get all awakened and get my body moving, or should I just lie here for 30 more minutes and just savor this nice cozy bed I'm in? And there are times when I think throughout the course of a person's life, you're going to lose that battle. You're going to just say, I think I'm going to just forego that quiet time, or at least the extra time today. And there'll be just times where you've got to fight that battle. You got to just say, and I think that's, of course, where habit is really helpful, where you just say, I'm not going to debate every morning at 6 whether I'm actually going to get up at 6 or not. When that alarm goes off, my feet just start moving, and I just automatically. And there's been a few times where I literally just about lost my balance because I'm hopping out of bed and I'm still half asleep and groggy and can't see straight, and probably shouldn't have a razor or anything sharp anywhere in the vicinity. but it's the only way, unless I just get myself moving. And once you get moving, it gets easier. You know, once you get out of bed, once you...
The trouble is, if you talk to yourself before, you just have to move before any discussion is had with yourself.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, ideally, I usually will hit the shower right away. I don't feel like it. I don't feel like getting all wet and all that first thing in the morning. I want to, you know, I really enjoy sitting down and savoring a cup or two of coffee before I do anything. But once that water hits, once I've shaved and so on, I come out of the shower and time to get dressed and ready to go. Now I'm awake, now I'm ready to go. And so the sooner you can get yourself awake, and alert, the sooner you can start growing and learning. And so, you know, I want to keep that hunger. Maybe just the last thing we could just touch on today is just, that hunger for growing more. And we've said this many times, but you can't give to others what you don't have yourself. And so yesterday I had 4 grandkids around this house, and this morning I took a nephew out for breakfast. My sister's going through some serious health issues right now, and you know, she's been in the hospital in intensive care now for about 2 months, and she's not leaving anytime soon. And I just felt like I need to take her only son out for breakfast. And for 2 months, his mother's been in intensive care. And but what do you say? You can't just say, "Oh, I'm sure it'll work out okay." You want to be able to say something that my sister's just had some horrendous times in the hospital. She's got all kinds of tubes in her right now, and my nephew's just a teenager, and he's dealing with his mother not being available for the last 2 months and fighting for her life. What do you say to someone like that? And you can't wing that. You can't just give a platitude. You can't just give a cliche. And so, you know, I look at the world around me and I just say, I don't know what to say. I don't, I'm not sure what God has to say about something like that. I need to find out. I need to just spend some time. And you know, whenever there's something like a world crisis, a military conflict, a terrorist attack, whatever it might be that captures people's attention, my dad just modeled for me rising early and having his Bible out, having his notepad out, and just saying, God, help me to understand this. Help me to have your perspective on this. Mm-hmm. And there's just always something new. There's always another crisis. There's always something that everybody is asking about. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people wanted my dad around, because they could ask him, well, Henry, what do you think about 9/11? Or what do you think about this crisis or that one? And they knew that my dad had spent significant time in God's presence to find what God had to say about that. And it was a fresh word. It wasn't something he'd studied 20 years ago. It was current. And he had run that current crisis through all kinds of scriptures and prayer and journaling and processing. And so he always had some mature insights, some things to say that nobody else was saying. And that comes from just never being content just to fire off the same kind of stuff. And we've all seen pastors that just preach the same sermons over and over again, or teachers that just, they teach the exact same notes year in and year out, adding nothing, tweaking nothing. Just, I put the effort in 20 years ago, and I'm still just reaping the benefits of that. And but everybody knows that even though it might be a finely presented lecture or sermon, that it just it doesn't ring fresh anymore.
Well, and it's insulting to the audience as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you've, you know, if you're teaching me the same thing you've always taught me, well, like, yeah, that's sort of insulting to the audience to say, well, so you've... You don't think there's any value in you learning something new to bring to the audience,
yeah,
as a speaker like that. To me, it's insulting.
Yeah, and I think as you get kids and your kids get older, you have grandkids and they are asking you questions. I look into the faces of my grandkids and just think, I don't want to get stale. I don't want to be that old guy that just keeps on telling the same old stories to his grandkids over and over again and has nothing new for them. Like, at a certain point, people figure that out, and they don't come asking anymore. They don't want to have any need to talk to you anymore. And so there's a lot there, but I think ultimately our walk with God is going to be the power base that gives us strength to forge ahead when we're facing opposition. It gives us joy even in the midst of all kinds of crisis and adversity. When we're criticized by others, we spend time with God and we receive His affirmation. I've just been again reminded lately that you know, don't ever let people's critiques cancel out God's affirmation. When God has affirmed something, then don't let anyone's negative opinion cancel that out. You got to decide whose opinion matters more to you, other people or God. But if you're not spending time with God, then the only opinion you're hearing is the opinion of others. And so I've had to say to folks that were being given a really hard time in their organization and their leadership, and they were thinking about quitting or walking away. And I've had to ask, well, who told you to be in that job in the first place? And they would typically say, well, God did. And I would say, well, then if God put you there, why are you letting people take you out? Well, they're doing that because they're listening to people now a lot more than they're listening to God. Mm-hmm. That's why their spiritual life, their walk with God has got to stay fresh, because otherwise people's opinions will start to loom larger in your life than God's. But if daily you're beginning every day in God's presence, you know, it's a noble undertaking to try to always let the first voice you hear every morning be that of God's instead of social media, emails, voicemails, whatever else it might be. And it's a challenge to do that. But if you let God set the tone of your day, the agenda for your day, then you can take on the voices of others because you've already heard from God. And you're not going to let any voice you hear subsequently cause you to deviate from what God has already said. So, but you can see leaders that along the way have just started to neglect their spiritual life. They're trying to coast on yesterday's walk with God. And when they do that, they get themselves in danger. And certainly a pitfall of many a leader is that when they were young, they were excitedly walking with God and searching His Word and eagerly spending time in prayer. And as they get older, they just get a little bit lazier. They rise later. They spend less time. They quit reading. They quit doing things that would feed their soul. And as a result, their soul gets overweight, gets soft, gets undernourished, and is just not able to sustain them into some of the challenges that leaders inevitably face.
Hmm. Well, it's a great reminder. And once again, we appreciate you taking us through these pitfalls of every leader, and we'll have more to come on this subject.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If this is something you enjoyed, it really makes a difference if you leave a review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends. We always love hearing from our listeners, so email us at podcast@blackbee.org.